This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, How Children Learn, the title of a new book by tonight's guest, teacher-author John Holt, who says our educational setup today is almost totally wrong. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call Collect from anywhere in the country. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Before he gets to school, a child has a love affair with life. His attitude toward everything in his world is to taste it, touch it, heft it, bend it, break it, and he's not afraid to make mistakes. It's only after they get to school that they learn to be stupid. That's a quote from our guest tonight, teacher John Holt, author of How Children Fail, which was published some 4 years ago, and of a new book called How Children Learn, which was published by Pittman. Time magazine has called Mr. Holt, in a very favorable review of his new book, one of U.S. education's most damning critics, unquote. Mr. Holt is standing by in Boston to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about how children learn and the basic things he thinks are wrong with our educational system. You may speak to him direct at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call him Collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. Now, listeners in Colorado, Texas, and on the West Coast, to be assured that you'll get to us directly, our special Western number is area code 212-749-3357. For the Western region, that's area code 212-749-3357. And, of course, in the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only at 866-5010. Mr. Holt, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
So nice to have you with us.
Well, I'm very glad to be on the show.
Mr. Holt, in your new book, you take one of your strongest blasts at the tell-em and test-em method of teaching. You say that most kids end up by only memorizing right answers to pass a given test at a given point in time, and that they are really not learning anything. And you say that most testing should be dropped. Would you elaborate for us?
Well, I think it all should be dropped. I don't think when we try to test people's learning, in the first place we don't succeed, and in the second place we stop most of the learning. I don't believe that testing has any part in real learning.
You're making a lot of children happy.
I hope so.
Well, how would you measure the learning process? Or are you saying it isn't something that should be measured or graded?
I don't think it can be, and I don't think it should be, even if we could. That is, I'm 45 years old. I've been doing a lot of learning on my own in the last 24 years. The only tests that I make, and the only tests that are any good, are the tests I make myself. And this is, of course, what children are doing before they get to school. They're testing their own learning.
Most people who write about the troubles of slum children in school claim that slum children speak badly because their parents do not correct their speech. Do you feel that this is a correct analysis?
I don't think it's a correct analysis. I don't even think it's a correct statement. I've personally known a number of slum children, and I have quite a number of friends who've taught slum children. They may not speak standard English in that sense, but I don't think it's at all true that they don't know how to communicate. They communicate very effectively when they're in a situation in which they feel safe and at home. So I don't really take much stock in most of what I've seen written about slum children.
Many people seem to have built their lives around the notion that they are in some way indispensable to children, and to question this is to attack the very center of their being. Would you elaborate on that?
Yes, the person I'm describing here is, well, I guess I was one myself for a good many years, what you might call a dedicated teacher, and I'm afraid I think that a lot of these dedicated teachers do a great deal of harm because they think all the learning has to start from them and go to the child. They don't give children any chance to learn independently on their own. But the only kind of real learning is independent learning.
I understand that thousands of children teach themselves to read every year. Do you have any statistics on how many children are able to teach themselves, and what process do they use?
No, we don't have any statistics. It must be hundreds of thousands, or maybe more than that, and we don't know the process. I know a number of kids who've done it, but I don't know how they've done it. I have a six-year-old nephew who's in the process of doing it right now, and I don't know how he does it. He sits, you know, he's what the schools would call a non-reader, and yet he spends an awful lot of his time really seriously looking at books. Now, I know he's figuring out things as he goes along, but I don't know how he's doing it. All I know is that he'd do it better if we left him alone and let him do it in his own way.
There has been a lot of criticism about the effect of television on the process of learning for children. Do you feel that television has been helpful?
Oh, I think it's been a mixture of things. I think it's unquestionably broadened the horizons of a lot of kids. I know the average 10-year-old today knows a lot of things about the world I didn't even know when I got out of college. I mean, certainly there's an awful lot of junk on television and probably a lot of really harmful stuff. But on the other hand, there's a great deal of information about the world that it might be hard for kids to get in any other way.
Mr. Holt, how should we train our teachers to be more sensitive and creative in their teaching process?
Well, of course, what I say about children, I think, applies to teachers, too. That is, I'm saying children ought to be free to learn in their own way. Well, teachers ought to be free to learn in their way. I think we should start in teacher training institutions to give perspective, to give future teachers the kind of freedom to develop their understanding of kids in their own way, using whatever resources seem best to them. And then the next thing, I think, and this is what teachers ought to be striking about, not the junk they do strike about, a teacher ought to be free to run his classroom in the way that seems best to him, doing for each child what he thinks that child needs at the moment, instead of being all bound up by a whole lot of junk of curriculum and tests and Regents exams and who knows what other kind of baloney. If the teacher were free to learn and grow in his own classroom, well, then the kids would be better off too.
We have called standing by, Mr. Holt, and we'll go to our night call listeners and remind you once again that tonight our discussion is How Children Learn, the title of a new book by John Holt, who's our guest tonight calling in from Boston. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And of course, as we tell you each night, you're always free to call us collect. Our West Coast number is area code 212-749-3357. That's 749-3357. And of course, in New York, it's 866-5010. We'll take our first caller tonight, Mr. Fuller, who is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM in New York. Mr. Fuller, good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your question, sir.
I'm a little excited getting on the phone here because usually there's a protection of the 7-second delay between us. And I feel as though I'm right in front of the microphone right there in the studio. But the idea that it's funny that this would be the topic of the program, childhood education. But this is one of the big things with my wife and myself at the moment. We have three little guys. And being of Afro-American or Negro or what have you, a descent, we are faced with a problem of what direction are we going in and what direction are we going to try to guide our kids in terms of giving them values, real values, and an education that relates to it, etc. So one of the things we found was that, well, being unable to see immediately the future, we have to sort of, or see the future period, we've got to prepare ourselves with what we have. And one of the things we do have is the wonderful minds, especially the young minds of our children. So we decided, well, education becomes very important. I don't mean that as a sort of a blanket platitude, but I mean education in a very intense and far incisive sense, one in which we attempt to teach our kids some of everything about everything, to become virtually experts in everything, if there is such a thing, or at least more knowledge than the average person would have at their disposal, because
H-O-L-T.
Mr. Holt?
Uh-huh.
Very glad to have you on the other end of the wire.
How do you do?
Are you one of the persons that was on the recent national television program, I think it was national, regarding the Negro in America, the thing that Bill Cosby had something to do with?
No, I wasn't. I'm very much concerned with it, but I wasn't on that program.
I see. I was trying to identify you with some of the faces that I saw, and all of the names didn't stick. I know Mr. Shields, or Dale Shields, had just identified that you were the writer of a recent book. Is it on the market everywhere now?
Yes, there's the first one is called How Children Fail, and the second one is called How Children Learn.
Oh, I see. It seems to me I've heard that, of those. And I'll make it a point to pick it up and read it. Have you anything, I guess we could say, that's not private, let's say, that regarding what we as what black people, let's say, must do in terms of this learning process?
Well, I think the learning process is the same for white, black, or any other color, mixture of colors. I think people of whatever age learn best when they're learning the things that are most important and most interesting to them, when they're learning for their own reasons and in their own style, in their own way. And so I think everything we can do to give kids an opportunity to make sense of the world in the way that makes most sense to them will help them.
Are you speaking of...
Well, Mr. Holt, how does one do this? How does a teacher do this if a teacher is faced with 50 children, and 50 children may come from 50 different homes and 50 different backgrounds? Now, where does the teacher start?
Well, you see, if we think that... When you say face, that's a... Right there, we've got a word that shows how mixed up we are. In most classrooms, that's exactly what is happening. The teacher is facing all the children, and all the children are facing the teacher. Why can't a lot of them be facing each other? They've all had different experiences in the world. They all have different knowledges, different concerns. In the kind of schools I'm talking about, and there are such schools in this and other countries, not many, but some, the teacher is only one of the people that the children learn from. They do a lot of learning from each other, and they do a lot of learning from other people who are not, strictly speaking, teachers.
If I might say, one of the problems, however, you know, that the Afro-American child faces is this sort of going in two directions simultaneously. A man named Dr. Kinder collaborated in a psychiatric work regarding a thing called a black man's... What's the black man's burden? I think that was the name of it, but what it, he tried to present was the fact that one of the things basic to the aspirations of an individual in this society is controlling, let's say, some aspects of it, and if not, say, controlling it overtly, that at least the products of his labor, or let's say the accolades or the rewards for being excellent in his field or excellent in his endeavor,
yeah,
are to receive the best of what he has in this environment. Now, the black child, as you are probably well aware of, is somehow deprived. Not somehow. It's very specific in specific cases. He's deprived of these prizes, let's say.
Yeah.
Of he becomes an athlete, and yet the athlete doesn't have his choice of the best girl.
Yeah.
Whatever the prizes happen to be, usually it is the female, and wealth and sundry other things that go along with it. And he's deprived of these prizes that go with it, and consequently, his stature is lessened. He's not really the champion. He's simply the, you know, the
yeah.
guy who can beat everybody, but not all around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I thought, well, how can we alter this aspect of it in the society in which we live? I think that somehow this is a part of the job of the teacher, be it the classroom teacher or his mother and father at home, or anyone aware of the situation and its consequences, I think are.
Yeah, it's an important question. It's a very tough question for black kids. But my own feeling is that when we go at education through the matter of prizes and how do we get people to win prizes, we're getting hold of things at the wrong end. You see, your newborn infant, your newborn child, who is learning better than he ever will again in his life, isn't learning for prizes. He's not learning for rewards or praise. He's learning because he wants to make sense out of this place, because his living is learning. And this gets turned off. I said it gets turned off in school. It gets turned off even before school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we can keep alive somehow the child's fascination in the world and his feeling that he can make some kind of sense of it, that he is a competent learner, that he will get better, then I think we may be able to help kids grow up to be the kind of people who can learn and grow in skill, even if they're not getting a fair deal in the matter of prizes.
Mr. Fuller, we want to thank you so much for calling, sir.
Right, thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. John Holt, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Holt after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and a worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call from anywhere in the country to John Holt about how children learn. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. John Holt, calling in from Boston. We'll take our next call, this time from Bellevue, Washington. Mrs. Savage is hearing Night Call over KUOW-FM in Seattle. Mrs. Washington, good evening. I'm sorry, Mrs. Savage?
Hello.
How are you?
I have a question for Mr. Holt regarding the problem of dyslexia or a specific learning disability. I would like to ask Mr. Holt if he feels that there is any value in a physical therapy program to establish a definite laterality or to solve a problem of mixed dominance or to solve a problem of fusion.
Well, it might be in some cases, but you see, I'm very skeptical about most of this specific learning disability things. I think the reason that most kids have trouble learning in school is not because something is wrong with their internal arrangements. I think it's because something is wrong with the school situation and the kind of pressures and tensions that the children are put under. I think, in other words, that if we had proper learning conditions, about 95% of these so-called specific learning disabilities problems would disappear. Now, there would remain a number of what I might call genuine cases, and in these cases, I suppose some of these things might help.
Uh-huh. What do you feel about the multisensory approach to learning? For instance, you know, the Slingerland-Gillingham-Orton method for coping with these children with this particular problem.
Oh, again, I haven't had wider acquaintance with Gillingham, for example. I once spent about a week in a school in which they were teaching reading very rigorously by the Gillingham method, and it seemed to me to be a silly method. See, my point is that kids would learn to read a lot faster and a lot better if we quit teaching them. They don't learn to talk because we teach them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend says, if we taught kids to speak, they'd never learn. And that's exactly right. It's the teaching that causes the trouble, not the reading.
I see. Now, for these youngsters with a learning disability, a problem of some sort, will they do as well in large classes in a public school? Should they be in a small classes in, you know, in a private school? Is there any difference, or is it actually the method of teaching that's the determinant?
Well, just the method. You see, it isn't. I'm not speaking of the method, meaning this method as opposed to that. I mean, the whole school routine, the business of being told, now here's what you've got to learn, here's the way you've got to learn, and every few minutes I'm going to ask you a question to make sure you've learned it, and if you haven't learned it, then the other kids are going to laugh and you're going to feel stupid and so forth. Now, some kids can survive this kind of pressure, this really very stupid situation, much better than others. Others just can't take it.
Uh-huh.
And they're the ones who seem to develop these things we call specific learning disabilities, which I think are psychoneurological defenses that are built up in them. Yeah, anything we do to take them out of this situation is probably going to be helpful, but I think we misunderstand the reason for their trouble.
I see. Well, then, what specifically would be your solution for coping with a child who would be 11 and who should be doing work, or who has an ability perhaps to operate in the top 10% of his class, just to, you know, to indicate, you know, the child's ability? What would be your solution then for coping with the child's problem?
Well, because I don't know the child, I really don't know what the problem is. This thing is taken up really very brilliantly in an article in the issue number 3 of a little paperback book called The New American Review. And a friend of mine, George Dennison, is writing, and he's talking about a boy in his school who who's 12 years old, seemed to have all kinds of extraordinary learning problems. Well, he did, but the learning problems didn't arise out of the innate difficulty of the material in front of them or in anything wrong with the kid. This boy's learning problems arose out of a kind of behavior which he'd learned to adopt as a result of being in school a long time.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if we take the heat off kids and say, look, learn the things that are interesting to you, and if you want some help, ask it and we'll give it, and if you don't, well, that's okay too. If we took the heat off him, I think that...
You don't think that a child like that would simply withdraw into fantasy or, you know, be the classic daydreamer?
Oh, I think he probably would daydream for a while, because he's got a lot of suffering and unhappiness to make up for, and daydreaming is probably a very good way of doing this.
Uh-huh.
But eventually, because we know from these kids that when they get their strength back and their confidence and, you know, get a new deep breath and their battery all charged up, then they begin to move out into the world again.
Uh-huh. That's pretty interesting. Now, this book that you referred to, is the New American Review?
Yes, it's a paperback. Looks like a paperback book, but they've had 4 issues, and the issue that I'm speaking of is issue number 3.
I see.
Mrs. Savage, thank you for calling.
All right, thank you very
much. Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, How Children Learn, which is the title of a new book by our guest tonight, Mr. John Holt, who's a teacher and an author, who says our educational setup today is almost totally wrong. We'll remain in Bellevue, Washington, and we'll take our next call. This time for Mrs. Macker, who is hearing Night Call over KUOW-FM in Seattle.
By the way, I was in Bellevue this summer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mrs. Macker, good evening.
Hello. Yes, I know Mr. Holt was in Bellevue this summer. I didn't hear him, but I read the article in the Seattle Times about his talk here. And I was very much interested, since I'm training to be a teacher. And I'm interested in early childhood. But I agree so much with Mr. Holt's notions. And a couple of things, I was wondering what he would think of these two things. First, in your suggestion that the way we teach and the classroom situations that children are put in actually deters learning, and I agree with that very much. What would you think of, instead of having our traditional classroom system, if there was sort of a central resource system and children, I don't know if this would be possible.
Yes, it is possible. There are places where they do this. I think some of this is being done in Bellevue, at least in some parts of the school system there.
Well, I mean, where they didn't have, the children were not in classes all day long, but they were more or less free.
Yeah, well, I want it to be more rather than less. But that's the direction I want to move in. A resource, school should be a resource, one of many, by the way. I don't believe in compulsory schooling. I don't see why kids should do all their learning in school. They never used to. But at any rate, it should be a resource which learners of, and by the way, all ages and sizes, why just kids, you know?
Yes.
Should be able to draw whatever they need, whatever they want, just as I, grown-up man, I can go to the library if I want to get a book from it. If I don't want to, I don't have to. I can go to the museum if I want to see something there. If I don't want to, I don't have to.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Holt, in a society that we live in America today where it seems that much of man's liberties seem to be going by the board, can we establish a system where kids can be this free and then step out into a society where they are not free?
Well, we have to. You see, one of the troubles of our society is precisely that they're not free, and this is one of the reasons why I'm interested in making these kinds of changes. You can't have a free society unless you have people who have experienced freedom in their own life and know what it feels like and care about it enough to want to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
If you train slaves in school, you're going to wind up with a slave society, and we're too far in that direction as it is, in my opinion.
Well, it means then that we'd have to do something about freeing the parents and freeing the teachers and...
Oh, yeah. I mean, we do the best we can. It isn't going to be done in one big jump, if you see what I mean. It's a step-by-step process. But what I'm saying is the more that we can free up the learning of kids, the more that we can give kids the direction of their own learning, so that they decide what they're going to learn and how and when and what resources they're going to use, the more this goes on, the better the learning is going to be. The smarter the kids are going to be, the better able they're going to be to cope with this rapidly changing world that they're growing up
but
in.
But when you talk about freedom, you are saying freedom with a direction.
Yes, but I think the direction has got to be very largely established by the learner himself. See, kids want to make sense of the world. They want to understand what's going on here. They want to get skill and competence and to be able to do what the bigger people are doing.
Well, half of the parents don't know what the world is all about.
Well, as you said, this is for all ages.
Sure, why just kids?
Mm. Well, the second thing is, I was wondering, maybe an earlier step that could be taken, particularly in the junior and senior high schools. It seems to me that if the kids could be given or could do things that they did on their own, that were creative, instead of a lot of the junk that I think that they have already had in elementary school and it's repeated a lot of it.
Yeah.
If they could do things that they actually produced or created themselves, I think that they'd be a lot happier at that level. They'd have lots of energy, and yet they're stuck in a lot of classes, a lot of which is repetition at that time.
Well, I entirely agree.
Like in art, in music, in art mechanics, and anything that they work with their hands and that they create something.
But the other thing, I think you're entirely right, but I would like to add to that as kids get older, and by the time they're junior high school, they're certainly old enough, it seems to me they ought to be given more and more opportunities to go out into the, let me say, the real world, the world outside of the walls of the school, and learn things at first hand and begin to see the world at first hand and begin to do real things in it.
Mrs. Macker, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Holt, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Holt after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Monday, the new 26-year-old head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Bill Hutchings says the black man can no longer afford to be just angry. Now he has to be smart, too. Tuesday, Jonathan Kozol, author of Death at an Early Age, The book that says that's exactly what happens intellectually to most young blacks in ghetto schools. Wednesday, the man who runs Urban Coalition's self-help projects in St. Louis, Donald Bourgeois. Thursday, President Elizabeth Kuntz of the NEA. She says paternalism is dead, but there are still an awful lot of people who haven't read the obituary notices. And Friday, Dr. J. Edward Carruthers of the Methodist Board of National Missions. He also says paternalism has to go, that kindness or charity doesn't make it anymore. Now it has to be faith, hope, and justice. All this next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call from anywhere in the country to John Holt about how children learn. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. Our guest tonight, calling in from Boston, is Mr. John Holt, who is a teacher as well as an author, and we're discussing his new book, How Children Learn. And we'll take our first call during the second half hour from Mrs. Day, who is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM in New York. And Mrs. Day is calling in from East Orange, New Jersey. Mrs. Day, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Shields.
How are you?
I thank you. It is indeed a pleasure to have an opportunity to talk to John Holt. I haven't talked to him since, I believe it was the spring of 67, when he was our guest, a guest of two nursery schools in New Jersey. We're still looking forward to your coming back.
So am I.
I'm the teacher. I think I was, you remember when we had the dinner?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm the black teacher who was present.
I see.
And I haven't read your new book. However, that night, you sort of gave us a preliminary talk about some of the things that were on your mind.
Yes.
Which I understand are in the new book.
Yes.
One of the gentlemen, if I understood him correctly, who spoke with you earlier over the phone, was speaking about knowledge and the importance of knowledge.
Yeah, I'd like to say before we go any further that I think intelligence is more than important than knowledge, and particularly in our world, and they're not the same thing. Intelligence is how you... Knowledge is how much you know, and intelligence is how you behave when you don't know. And in a world as rapidly changing as, and confusing as ours, we need people, we need more and more intelligence. Knowledge goes out of date very quickly, you know.
Right. And I think another thing we forget, and I think it's especially important, and I'd like to hear your reaction to this, besides knowledge, it's important for children to know what they feel.
Yes.
And at the same time, to feel what they know. And if I understand you correctly, one way of getting people, getting children to feel what they know is to, you know, get out into the world, as you were just saying a few minutes ago to the other lady. And even with the very young, we forget about these two aspects of the human being, I think, in the classroom.
It seems to me that just about everything that happens to a child in the normal, the conventional school experience denies his real existence as a person. His interests, his concerns, his experience, his tastes and his hopes and his fears, all these are brushed aside as if they were worthless. And a kid pretty soon becomes, he begins to think that maybe he really is nothing.
Yeah.
Just a kind of an empty jug for various people to fill up with this, that, and the other.
I'd just like to just add this so someone else can get on the line. Billy Taylor, who is involved with WLIB, wrote a song entitled, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. And I think Nina Simone does a terrific job of singing this. And if you could hear young people singing this, I think you would get a big thrill out of it. And goes on, I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. And I think this is what we want our children to feel inside. This, in order for the learning process to go on, there has to be a freeing inwardly.
Yes, yes.
I would just like to add a note, Mrs. Day, that the tune that Billy wrote was actually inspired by his daughter.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
How old is his daughter?
I don't know. I think she's a preteen, though.
I've been wanting to know what inspired him to write it, because I can. It's so deep. You can look and think about this, the words, in so many different aspects. It could be a black man talking to a white man. It could be a child talking to a mother, a child talking to a teacher. I wish I could break all the chains holding me, you know. If you get a chance to, John, please get a hold of it. I think you'd enjoy it.
Well, I will.
Mrs. Day, thank you so much for calling.
Goodbye.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, How Children Learn. And our guest tonight is Mr. John Holt from Boston. And we'll go now to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mr. Lucas is hearing Night Call over WAAA-FM. Mr. Lucas, good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I am a student. And I guess that gives me somewhat of a unique advantage at viewing what Mr. Holt has said. However, Mr. Shields said in introducing Mr. Holt that Mr. Holt seems to think that the school system is almost totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but I can see some of the things that are wrong. For instance, you know, we are taught in school, you know, we're given certain facts, and during testing time, we're asked to give them back. Or regurgitate them.
Yeah.
In sort of a give and take or stimulus response type of thing. I don't necessarily agree with that. As a matter of fact, I abhor it. But what I really would like to know is how do you get the system to change? I think the one thing that I have found since I've been in school that teachers are more reluctant to change than anybody. And, well, I found this out through experience. I should have been out of high school a year ago. But I'm still in high school, and this is the lesson that I learned while, I guess, getting behind, that teachers are reluctant to change. And how do you get the teachers to change the system if the system is wrong?
Well, that's a good question. It's one I'm working on all the time. Of course, the system is made up of a whole lot of people, and some of them are relatively ready to change and see new ideas, and some are a little bit, and some just are set in their ways, and there's not much to do except wait for them to retire and meanwhile try to figure out other ways to compensate for the damage they do. I think what we have to do is, in trying to change a thing like education, which involves so many people, is to talk to as many as we can, find out who are sympathetic, who are allies, put our heads together, see how we can multiply our influence. One of the things that's happening, of course, in this country, well, of course, a lot of the schools are changing, and in places where they're not, we're beginning to see what you might call competing educational institutions or schools with a small s or something like that. And places where people, you might call them free learning centers, and where these are springing up in various parts of the country, they're very effective, and from them, we begin to see how powerful free learning is, and maybe this will change people's minds.
Oh, one other thing that doesn't necessarily deal with how does a child learn, but I think is of great importance, and it does concern itself with learning, is that the black people, many black people, or all of the black people, have been in some way given inferior education, and this type of thing perpetuates itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, it really strikes me as being terrible. How does learning relate to getting really a superior education?
Well, education is learning, and one of the things I would say to black people whose kids are in inferior schools or who are themselves in inferior schools. I have said this many times. Look, if the school is a bad learning resource, find other resources. I mean, I've been out of school now for about 24 years, and I've done an awful lot more learning since I got out than I ever did when I was in. So if you're stuck with some kind of a crummy school situation, don't feel that because that's the case that that you can't do any learning. Get out and start learning independently. In a sense, make up your own school with you the center of it, and learn from as many people as you can find that seem to you to have something to say.
Mr. Holt, do you view the present situation in New York where communities are now getting involved in many of the experimental schools? Do you see much hope for this new innovation?
Oh, yes, I do. I think it's very important.
While we're talking about the black-white situation, in many areas, blacks are being told that in order for them to be able to take their place in the world today, that they will have to learn the middle class values, they'll have to learn what is happening in the middle class schools. And now if you are saying to us that school is mainly a place where you follow meaningless procedures to get meaningless answers to meaningless questions, it seems to me that the black people are in a worse situation.
Yeah, I think in a way they are. See, one of the things I've been saying is that schools are bad for all kids, not just poor kids and black kids. They're bad for the rich white kids, too. I think the rich white kids survive with a little less damage because they have compensating resources, and in any case, you know, they've got other things going for them.
Mr. Lucas, we want to thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And good luck to you.
I think it's all the more important for the black community to develop, let's say, supplementary educational institutions. If their schools aren't serving them well, then they've got to, like the Harlem Street Academies, I think of as just one of many examples of a kind of thing. You see, people, human beings, have been learning now for a couple of million years, and schools are a very recent invention. And we're all mixed up when we start thinking that you can't have any learning unless you've got a school somewhere with somebody in it called a teacher. People learn from each other all their lives, and, I could say a lot about that.
All right. We'll go out to San Diego, California for our next call. Mr. Scott is hearing Night Call over KOGO-FM. Mr. Scott, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I, first of all, would like to compliment your guest this evening, Mr. Holt. I want him and you to know that at least there are some of us out here whose sympathies are in full accord with his views.
Mr. Scott, your voice is a little faint. Could you...
Yeah, sure. It seems to me that the biggest problem that faces you and us is implementation of your programs, of your criticisms. Sort of like, have you got the patience that it'll take to get these things, these changes made in school systems?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah?
Mr. Scott, would you attempt to project just a little bit, sir? You're coming all the way in from San Diego. We're having a bit of a problem with your line.
Okay, well, I'll try. I was just saying that it seems to me the biggest problem with Mr. Holt's points of view, with which I agree 100%, is implementation.
Yeah.
And does he and do we have the patience it'll take to see these programs through?
Well, I've got lots of patience. I mean, as in anything else in life, if you see what's got to be done, we have to start doing it. And if it takes a long time, okay, it takes a long time. But I think the survival of our country, and indeed our whole, what we call our civilization, depends on finding ways to free up the potential in children. I don't think we can afford to go on as we are.
I agree. I wonder if any of your inspiration might possibly have come from the book by A.S. Neal called Summerhill.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm a great admirer of Neal, and within the next week, I expect to be in Summerhill talking to him. He's a very good friend of mine, but the truth is I didn't read his book until after I had come to think very much like him as a result of my own experience.
I see. I would be curious in knowing what would be the result of your visit with him, because I'm very interested in him myself.
Oh, well, we're all friends. We're very good friends. I'm I'm looking forward to seeing him again. I think he's a great pioneer in human thought.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Scott, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. John Holt, calling in from Boston. And tonight we are discussing how children learn right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Holt after station identification. Monday night on Night Call, the new national chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Phil Hutchings. He says the time has passed for the black man just to be angry. Now he has to be smart. Hutchings is not calling for the black man to arm himself, but he isn't saying the black man shouldn't arm himself either. Instead, the new 26-year-old head of this black militant organization says, "We want to put something in his head before putting a gun in his hand." Hutchings told this to a New York Times reporter. "We must get angry and smart at the same time. The white man wants riots and black people in the streets. He has armed his police force and would welcome the chance to kill black people. We've got to move on all levels and on all fronts. Angry but smart." Phil Hutchings, the new head of SNCC, on Night Call, Monday night. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call from anywhere in the country to John Holt about how children learn. Again, Del Shields.
And we go out to Indianapolis, Indiana for our next caller. Mrs. O'Neill is hearing Night Call over WTLC-FM. Mrs. O'Neill, good evening.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Almost touched on one of the subjects that I want to speak on, and this is, as far as a slow child, how could you help a slow child in learning other than putting it into a special class? Because, you know, like the first lady had said, I don't too much approve of it. With some children, you know, it works out fine, but with others, I think it just makes it worse, you know, like maybe a backward, slow type of child, then other kids are teasing and calling them, you know, first one thing or another. And in a class like this, you know, this is going to tend to, you know, tighten him up, and he's not going to learn anything at all. And I'd like to know what his ideas would be on helping other than this class.
I would like to say that I absolutely disapprove of the idea of having so-called slow classes and fast classes in schools. They're very bad for the kids. But aside from that, see, I just don't believe in such things as slow children and fast children. When the schools label a kid as being slow, what do they mean? Well, they mean he is slow to do the things that the school wants him to do. That doesn't mean that he may not be exceedingly bright and capable in 1,000 other ways. The school isn't interested in those ways. Mm-hmm. Now, what I think we need to do for kids who are having a hard time in school and whose confidence is being destroyed is to try to make them feel that their personal interests in life are important, and that their talents, whatever they are important, even if they don't happen to fit the traditional school picture. And when a child begins to think of himself as having some real worth, and that his interests are respected and amount to something, and that his talents are being encouraged, then he's going to stop thinking of himself as being slow, and then he's going to stop being slow.
Well, most children start the kindergarten at 5. But do you think that maybe they start? Would you think that maybe starting a little younger would be, you know, better for them?
Oh, it depends so much on the kindergarten and the kid. If a kid is, you know, some little kids are gregarious and they love company and they love to be with other kids and they like that kind of action. And for them, kindergarten is a great place. And other children are quiet and contemplative, and they like time to think and do their own thing, and for them, kindergarten is just hell. And it's just hard to make a rule. I would say if a kid likes it, let him go. And if he doesn't like it, because I don't believe, as I said earlier, I don't believe in compulsory school attendance laws anyway. I think they harm learning instead of helping it, and that kids would learn a lot more in school if they could go the days they wanted to and stay home the days they didn't. But that's another question.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. This time out to Omaha, Nebraska. Mr. Rourke is hearing Night Call over KBON in Omaha. Mr. Rourke, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you?
Well, what I've heard, I feel very good. There's one thing I wanted to ask. I'm kind of slow at reading. At sometimes I get to read some of the periodicals that I receive, but there's an article in the Saturday Evening Post dated May 18th. It says that there's 15,000 times a day that mostly teenagers start picking up things out of stores and walking away with them. And most of them are not kids that really need the money or need the things. They do it just as it says for the hell of it. And that is what is written on there. I don't know why or what we're going into.
What was that figure again, sir? How many?
It says 15,000 times daily.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Most of the kids I grew up with did some shoplifting when they were little. It's an adventure for little kids, you know. And one of the things kids need when they're growing up is adventure. And one of the troubles with our industrial society, I mean, it's true all over the world, is that the only adventures that are open to kids really anymore are adventures that break the law. How else can a kid be adventurous?
Most of these happen. Kids that have a fair allowance, they can buy anything they want.
Oh, sure.
But, as it says, just for the HL of it.
Well, and it's a little more than that, you see. This is a test of your courage. And kids need to test their courage. The reason why kids make these kind of phony challenges for themselves is because we haven't put any real challenges in front of them, and the school is no challenge, this fake, made-up, teacher-pleasing work they have to do. What we need to do, I think, is make it possible for young people to find more ways to be really useful in society, to come up again. I mean, as early as 12, 13, 14, to come up against real problems, to help make their town or whatever it is a better place to live in. And I'm not talking about sweeping up people's backyards. I mean dealing with real problems. If kids have something to get their teeth into, like when kids start working in politics, then they're going to have something serious enough and interesting enough so they won't have to get their kicks out of shoplifting.
Mr. Rock, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and we'll take a call this time from Victoria, Canada. Mr. Waldhaus is hearing Night Call over KUOW in Seattle, Washington. Good evening, Mr. Waldhaus.
Good evening.
Thank you for calling, sir.
I thank you for having the opportunity to speak to Mr. Hope. Is Mr. Hope there?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Hope, I agree with many of the points that you have made, but I disagree strongly with the degree in which you level your attack against the present school system. I think, from listening to you, that you have the impression that every student is a potential bright, sharp, self-interested intellect.
Right.
Wishing to educate himself.
That's what I think.
Having his own direction, having his own ideas formed or forming, and therefore could practically provide for his own education. But as you've mentioned, we have such a fast-moving society. We have such specialization. We have so many directions in which to move that I, from my own experience, found that these children, most of the children, don't have either the direction or the intelligence or even the motives to find these directions, to study and to want to learn in a way that will lead them to a satisfactory goal in the end, that there must be people to provide this for them. I believe that there's a small percentage who are capable of doing what you're proposing, and these people are going to these free schools, which I think are a wonderful thing. But I think your attack on the main institution, which is really there to help the masses, is a little too violent in saying that they're all futile or that they are not
achieving purpose. Well, I think they're worse than futile. I think they're positively harmful. You see, we've got a real disagreement here. I think kids, all of them, without exception, unless we take, kids with severe mongoloids or people like that, they start off curious about the world, and they start off with an enormous desire to be more intelligent and more competent, and it gets turned off. They start out bright, and they get stupider as they go along. Now, sure, they need direction and outside help. I'm not saying that if you dropped a child on a desert island, he'd live there all by himself, that he would learn anything. No, I think children learn as they do when they're very little by interacting with real people in real situations, by having real relationships with other human beings in a real kind of a world. But this doesn't happen in school. The child isn't talking about the things he's interested in. The teachers aren't talking about the things they're interested in. It's all a charade. It's all a fake. Sort of jumping through little hoops to get rewards.
Yes, but aren't we presuming that all these interests of these children are formulated, are leading somewhere, have any validity as to their later development in a particular direction? What I'm trying to say is that if we have these children as free as you say and following their own ideas, we will perhaps have a large number of people who are with a greater general load of knowledge, but what will their purpose in society be? What will they say after 10 years of this type of education, having general knowledge?
Yeah. Let me interrupt you a second.
In society, but having no purpose, no direction.
I was sitting at dinner tonight, not more than about two and a half hours ago, and there were two people sitting at a table behind me, and one of them was saying, they were talking about the education of engineers, and one of them said to the other, you know something, 5 years after an engineer today gets his diploma, he's obsolete. Now that's how fast knowledge is changing in today's world. The idea that we take a kid, we put him in a school building, and we pack his head full of knowledge, and then he goes out and uses it the rest of his life, it may once have been true, it's just not true anymore.
Mr. Waldhaus, thank you so much for calling,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York, and we've reached that point that is always a sad point for us because we are unable to take any more calls. And Mr. Holt, the phones are still ringing. And I think we need about 5 more hours, and we're going to give you just about 30 seconds to give us some kind of projection on where we go from here. But in the meantime, we'd like to tell our Night Call listeners that if you do have a question for Mr. Holt that we can pass on to him, you can drop your question to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, 10970. Mr. Holt, can you give us about 30 seconds?
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station. Angry but smart. That's what the new head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee says the black man has to be today. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.